This episode of Super Pulp Science is brought to you by Gear and C by Claire C. Marshall. Friendship, jealousy, and the guts to choose between them intertwine in this brand new adventure of the Silent Guardian series, A World of Robots and the Kids Who Love Them, created by GMB Kamichuk and Justin Curry. Available at fairyinkpress.com.
Attention, citizens! It's time for Super Pulp Science!
This is Super Pulp Science, where we talk about how genre gets made. I'm here with our long-suffering co-host and producers, Dan Vadeboncourt. Say hi, Dan.
Hi, Dan.
And Justin Curry, known the world over as Chasing Artwork.
Howdy.
Howdy. I am Gregory Kamichuk. I am a writer and illustrator doing my best to make a living slinging words and pictures at people. Justin, why don't you tell new listeners about yourself?
Oh, God. Like,
do it.
Okay.
Do it. Tell us.
He told you ahead of time. He was going to ask you this. Now you're acting all like taken aback. Like, oh,
I want you guys to know that Justin is paid to speak professionally in front of groups of hundreds of people occasionally. Do not take this pause and frightened expression that he has right now as how he normally operates.
Yeah, in my mind, this was not. Yeah, I thought we were doing something a little bit different. But anyways.
Our mandate is this episode is somebody's first episode.
All right. My name is Justin Curry. I am a vector illustrator based in Winnipeg. I specialize in a particular type of illustration called shattered vector painting, which has gained me some notoriety in the illustration world. I work for myself. I publish graphic novels and comics, and I also do work for clients on the side, and some big ones include Marvel and Netflix and Purelator. And what else? I have a dog. I like to go boxing, and I like running in the rain.
It's perfect. There you go. See, now people know who you are. They know all about you. We are coming at you from our studio in the Exchange, which Justin and I share. Although it's been interesting this last year, just how you share a studio, but we've got that. And Dan comes down here as our podcast brain, Podcast Dan, and puts this show together for us. And today, one of the things we're going to talk about is workflow, which is why I thought it was important that people know kind of what we do before we talk about how we do it.
And it's a great topic because it's something we're like I also teach at Red River College, we should mention that, and we are covering that in class. We always cover it like, early on with students, like time management, workflow, and we look at a lot of different systems that are out there. And of course, there's all kinds of you know, like self-help gurus out there that will help you manage your time better and all that kind of stuff. So you have to kind of cut through all the clutter. But we do talk about it quite a bit because it's very, very important to manage your time properly when you have a lot of complex tasks to complete, which you guys do.
Before the podcast, you were telling us about how you had your students track their time. Use, are there apps or websites that you'd recommend that are out there for time tracking?
I tell them to use Toggle. Toggle is just it's the one I came across and started using myself, and I use that to track all my freelance time. So I have them start using that because a lot of them do end up, the design students, the ones in the DMD program or graphic design program, will start doing freelance. Even the CRECOM students do freelance as well. So that's, they're really interested in that because they're like, oh, I can make money doing this stuff. So they get, really keen on the Toggle. But overwhelmingly, like what I asked them to do for a week was to track and analyze what they did, like just everything they did during the day. And there were so many hours watching YouTube playing video games. Like, I mean, I understand that it's important to have fun and to enjoy yourself, but you have to get the work done too, right? So maybe we can talk a little bit about that and what happens when we get distracted from the work or don't feel like doing the work and what you guys do to get yourselves back on task. I'd like to cover that as well.
I think that's a great point. What I'll say is how this came up is that my sons and I finished watching all of Voyager. And we were looking for the new Star Trek show. P.S. If you're just tuning into this show, I'm a huge Star Trek nerd. And so
every episode too.
Inundating my children in this. It's not really so much a fandom as a lifestyle. And so we started watching our new Star Trek show that we're trying out. I said, we'll try out a few first episodes. So we're trying Deep Space Nine. And the first episode of Deep Space Nine is about how the people of the Federation live in linear time, and these aliens they meet have no concept of linear time.
And Founders.
I know it seems funny, but this got me thinking about workflow. Because how I organize my projects in the studio space I have at home in our library is essentially how the aliens describe their non-linear existence, which the humans are like, that's insane. You couldn't live that way. I'm like, that's exactly how I organize my projects, which is like a cloud of things that are happening. And wherever my attention is now. Right? As opposed to some people who have workflow that is very specific. Every week they have a certain threshold to meet. That becomes a linear workflow. And so I think it's really important when we're discussing workflow to separate that there are different ways to do it. And so if you're tracking it on an app that is expecting you to put X number of hours in on X number of projects and track that as billable hours, that's going to force you into a linear way of thinking about your time and your projects and your attention. Whereas there are other systems that we've used in the studio in the past that are more this non-linear way of approaching a body of work and fitting it into what you can do in one day.
An example of that is a page rate versus an hourly rate.
That's right. When I'm working on comics, I work on a page rate and not an hourly rate because some pages take all day or 2 days. Some pages take 4 or 5 hours, and it's hard to know which of those two it's going to be, and a client can't really understand. And the reason why I might be able to finish one page in 5 hours is because I've done thousands of pages of comics, and so I have some experience to bring to it. So it's not cheaper because it's faster. It's actually more expensive because it's faster, right? And those things sort of go into how you're going to manage your workflow. And I think it's also important to mention that both Justin... Actually, not just my Dan also. We have projects that are our own projects that we put our personal time into. And then we have projects that we do for other people that we have certain expectations and benchmarks to meet. And then we have long-form projects that also have time in mind, but not necessarily we work on it every week so many hours. Like if we are planning a new graphic novel, say, and we know it's going to come out next year, but we're putting that together ourselves, but it's still according to a solid timeline, right? And so when you're talking about workflow, I think it's important to be really specific about what the expectation is. A client expects something on time for a certain price. How you manage that workflow is different than, say, an agent or a publisher who expects a finished project that is of a certain quality.
Yeah, and I just want to say right now that part of the reason for this is that you can be more efficient and not waste time. And part of what I'm doing with Toggle is I'm tracking all the time. I have a new podcast client right now, working with a gentleman named Zach who's producing the Let's Go Bombers podcast. Any Bomber fans can check that one out. He's really really good guy. And what I'm doing, and I quoted him a certain price for this, and I'm giving him my podcast starter pack, which is essentially everything you need to start a podcast, and I will help you with all the aspects of it for a flat rate. And I basically came up with a rate. I did calculate how many hours I thought I would put into this. This is my first time actually doing it in practice. So I'm tracking my hours to make sure that I'm not going to work more than I plan to work. Because if I quoted him a certain price and then it ended up working twice as much as I planned, then that's just kind of wasted time, right?
Right?
So that's another important part of this as well. So that's why I'm not doing it to see how much I should bill him for. He's already paid me. I'm tracking my time to make sure I'm not working too much.
And this is really important in this. If you spend any time on Instagram, you will get inundated with this idea of hustle culture as like this go, go, go thing. You'll die.
Yes.
All right? Don't listen to that. The only people who benefit from that are the people who already have capital and assets to force you to work for nothing. Right? What you need to do is you need to figure out how your workflow is going to directly benefit you. So if Dan, who has lots of cool audio engineering podcast-related projects of his own to do, wants to have some time, he needs to manage his time for a client so that the extra hours are for him to work on his own dreams, his own things, his own stuff. And it's this always this balance between how you pay the bills and how you have a life that is worth having. And you have to make sure that you're balancing those things. So I think it's important.
Yeah. A lot of our students are struggling right now because they're just coming into this, like they're just starting a program in post-secondary, and it's a lot of new things they're learning and a lot of new processes, and they are just used to not having as much to do, right? So you have to kind of adjust to that, and you have to kind of figure out. And it's also important, I think you guys do a great job of this, of figuring out when you are most productive. And I think you guys have a good handle on when you work best, at what time of day do you work best.
Yeah, very important thing to recognize.
Anyone under 45 is perfectly capable of touching his toes. I'm 39 and I've had 4 children.
What I've been thinking about, like, while everybody's talking as well, is how I handle projects differently depending on the scope.
Scope is so important. Right? Yeah, tell us more about that. That's
like,
great. You're good
at that. I have a couple of projects on the go right now, and some I almost think of like a sprint. It's a piece that I could, like, pound out in a day. Like, if I wake up in the morning, have my coffee and oatmeal, and start this piece and zero in on it, by 5:30, this is going to be, like, ready to go to the printers.
Right. Laser focus.
Yes.
No distractions. Not going to answer the phone. Not going to check
and
email.
And so in my mind, yeah, that's how I want that project to be. I don't want to piecemeal it across a week or two. I want to set aside a day to just start to finish, get this project done and out the door.
Yeah.
And then there's other projects that I know are going to take a lot more planning and a lot more back and forth and a lot more thought of how the schedule is going to go. So I have, yeah, I have a couple different projects that are varying different scopes, and the workflow is kind of different depending on that project.
I'll say that this brings to mind something that my wife and I have sort of figured out, is that my sprint time, if I use your verb here, mm-hmm, my sprint times are almost impossible during the day. Just with kids
many,
and school,
yeah,
and there's too many other
there's distractions,
stuff.
There's things.
So my sprint time is usually after the kids go to bed. And my wife also keeps regular human hours, so she goes to bed at a reasonable hour. And so I often will work late into the night, 2 or 3 a.m., as my sprints. Mm-hmm. And so in order for us to have a sort of a semi-healthy lifestyle, I've found that for my own energy levels, I need to have at least one day where I don't have to get up at any set time. And we've set that day in our weekly schedule so that there's one day where if I know I'm dragging in the week or whatever, I can look forward and say, like, well, on that day, the phone's going to be off. No one can reach me. My wife's going to keep everyone away, and I'm just going to sleep until I wake up. And that is one of those ways in which we've managed. You know, it's just when you're a parent, the stress levels. Dan is nodding fervently. He knows, right? And so that's one of those ways in which it sounds wise now, but we had to figure that out the hard way. And so sort of this is me saying that if you're a person that likes to sprint and needs that time and is feeling like, I just can't do the project if I'm being interrupted, I hear you. But that's just one type of project. So you don't sprint on everything. Let's talk about the things you don't sprint on and talk about the way that if we think about projects in a non-linear way, that if you're in your cloud of things to do in the month, if you have a couple of sprints, what else do you have going on in the month?
So let's talk about, there was a project I finished up just recently for a company called Drop.com, which is a high-end mechanical keyboard company. They do like really cool color-schemed mechanical keyboards that if you're really into like gaming or just, you know, decking out your computer rig, these are the guys that have the cool keyboards that you're going to want.
Right. And for transparency's sake in podcast land, they're not a sponsor of this podcast.
No.
It's just a legitimate client. So that's why
they're great to work for. Yeah. So we've wrapped up a project and we're working on another project together right now. But this was a big involved illustration. And they wanted to do an original concept. And so I pitched them a bunch of ideas of a bunch of kids building a robot. So clearly playing to my strengths. And
you forgot to mention that off the top as well. The audience should know. Anybody listening to this for the first time should know that Justin loves robots.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
And Gregory likes darkness.
Tentacles and darkness.
Yeah, ouch, that hurts. I also like robots. True, I feel like we have a good Venn overlap.
Yeah, I'm looking around the room and I see Justin's like bright, vibrant pieces of robots and your dark skeletons and things around that are very much a lot of dark and grays. Here, but
you have not miscategorized me. That's right. The reason I'm such a happy person is put all the darkness on the page.
That's right.
Yeah. So for example, with that scene, I started with, I think, 4 to 6 thumbnails of different scenes. We picked the one, and then the first thing I did was, it was a robot, and it was all this kind of mechanical equipment, and it was a bunch of kids, and it was a bunch of computer equipment. And so the very first thing I did was I kind of zero in on one element and just concentrate on that. So I just concentrated on the robot's design. And so I concentrated on making it a full, complete robot, knowing that as the scene went on, I was going to take one of his arms off and a bunch of panels off and spread those throughout the scene.
You could take him apart later.
But I wanted to make him a complete whole design before I ripped him apart. And that was for a couple different reasons. One, to make sure I knew exactly what it was all going to look like when it went together. Like, it needed to make sense. If you see this arm over here, you connect, like, okay, that's clearly supposed to be attached to that
robot. The shape
robot.
Language tells the story as your eyes go across the piece, right?
So I designed the robot, and then I did a whole bunch of different color tests with it. I made him white, yellow, black, blue, and then I talked to the client about just the robot design, and so we had a back and forth on that. And then I just kind of forgot about the robot, and I just started building the little human kid characters by themselves in the poses they needed to be in, but just kind of playing around with, like, their clothes and shoes and their color schemes. And then, so I, you know, it's kind of like I'm just taking that one big project and separating it into these sprints that we talked about.
Right.
So I don't have to worry about this huge, complex scene, because by the end, they're on a spaceship with these big windows of space, and there's all this junk everywhere and all these wires and all this mechanical stuff, and
I saw the piece. It's a great piece.
There's a ton going on, right? There's like a million things to look at and point. But for what helps me is just to isolate those little elements by themselves and just take that work day just to concentrate on those. And I find that makes those the strongest. If I try to work on it all at once, I'll get distracted, right? I'll be drawing this kid's jacket, and then I'll jump over the robot's arm, and then I'll jump over to a background element, and then I'll jump over to, oh, I want to plant by this chair over here, so I'm going to work on that. And you just kind of, you jump around a bit, and things kind of get half finished, and then...
So if you're managing your time for a project like that,
mm-hmm.
is it just experience now that lets you say, okay, there's going to be so many human elements in this, I know that's about a day, there's a robot, to design it fully, that's about a day sprint, maybe to put it all together is another day.
Yeah.
That's what's going. It's just your experience coming through.
So, actually, this brings up another thing that I wanted to talk about on the podcast one day, is how this illustration job came from another piece that I did. It's called The Noodle Shop. And I just had this idea of this kind of rusted robot that humans came along and built a restaurant attached to it. And they power their ramen restaurant from this leftover battery cell in this robot.
Now, kids love that piece, by the way.
Yeah?
We got it with our Dragon Nanny copy.
Yeah. It was one really of the good. Stretch goals for Dragon Nanny, and I had so much fun making it. I'd never really made a piece that complex with that
so
many
good.
Things going on. You have the robot, you have the restaurant, you have, like, five different humans, like, doing different things. You have a bunch of chickens, you have cats, you have, like, all these little Easter eggs hidden in the scene. And it took a really long time, and it was very involved. And that's the piece that this drop company kept citing when they were hiring me. It's like, we loved what you did with that. We want something like that.
Yes.
Make us something like that.
Yeah.
So because I had this personal piece that I did for no other reason than just because I wanted to do it,
right.
I got this big client who wanted the same kind of thing.
Yeah, it's the hustle culture paradox. And I've said it many times on the show that if you won't do it for free, you'll never get paid to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But this is what I'm talking about.
That's, exactly, one-to-one. This happened because I did that for myself.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Not because a client came to you and said, do it for no money, but because you're already practicing, working, refining your craft. That experience is being built in by the fact that you, as a working artist, and by working, I mean you do it every day. I don't care how much you get paid for it if you're listening and you're an artist. If you're working on the actual task to build the skills to get better at it, you are a working artist. And if you are a working artist, then there'll be more people who are aware of your work who then will offer you work.
Justin, what you're describing as far as jumping around, that is something that a lot of my students described as being an issue with them, is that they can't focus on one task. I'm going to do this for a little bit, then I get bored of that and I move on to the next thing, and it's very, very helter-skelter and kind of all over the place. And they find that to be a problem.
Yeah.
And so do you find that to be a problem, and how do you refocus? And maybe going, just jumping off of that, how do you deal with procrastination, or do you even have that problem of procrastination?
Definitely. That's definitely a problem. So I noticed when I worked for a company and was working on like their clock. And when I only had one task during the day, like I had one project to do until it was finished, and that kind of ground me down a bit, not being able to jump around. Okay. So I found when now that I was working for myself and I could kind of jump around a bit, I was way more productive. I never stopped working. Whereas when I just had one task to do and I was bored to tears, I'd find ways to waste time, you know, like I'd check Facebook and check email. And
you
like,
convince yourself that, like, you know, doing your social media is also working, even though you're, right? And it is also working
for you guys, yeah,
if you're managing it the right way. I'll say this about that.
I always felt really guilty about that. Like, I felt like there was something wrong with me that I couldn't
focus for eight hours
on that one thing.
I hate purity. I hate goodness. I don't want virtue to exist anywhere. I want everyone corrupt.
Well, I ought to suit you then. I'm corrupt to the core.
Maybe you should have a trigger warning for deep ennui may set in. This is a deep ennui trigger warning. This is from prose writing, and this is from graphic novel making on my end. This is from art making on my end. This is something I wrote down here to remind myself to talk about, and it goes like this. Not finishing is failure. And I remind myself of that every day I sit down to work, that it's fine to move around. I have this cloud of projects, mm-hmm. but adding something to the cloud is not the same as being productive. Finishing something is a sign of productivity. Adding something to the cloud is a sign of interest, of creativity, but productivity is when I remove things from the cloud. And so if I keep adding to that cloud of things to do, I know I'm not actually being productive. And when I think about it in a non-linear sense, and I actually have the board at home where I put things up that I'm working on and that are due and what state.
I think that's a really important habit to have, is have an actual physical representation of your list of projects.
Right. And for those of you wondering, like, what does that look like? It's not fancy. It's just a bunch of recipe
Post-its,
cards with different colors and Post-it notes stuck to those. And those are put up right in my workspace. So when I sit down and I go, and I'm going to do something that is a distraction, my eyes will wander to that one place. And then, it's like how you think. You roll your eyes back and you sit back in your chair. Into that visual space is this cloud of things that I told myself I wanted to do. That's why I put them in the cloud. So pick one and finish it.
How do you complete the tasks that you don't like doing?
I try to do them first.
I think that's where procrastination comes in as a good thing, too.
Okay.
Like, I'll skip around, but once that deadline starts to approach, the procrastination really kind of nips you in the butt to focus on that thing that you didn't really want to do.
You mean the cold sweat of a potential failure? Is that what you're talking about? Like, I'm going to fail them if I don't do this?
Yeah. I'd rather not feel that.
Yeah.
Can we talk about one of those examples? Do you have an example, Gregory, of a time where you missed a deadline, where you failed?
Huge. A couple.
Yeah. Couple.
Yeah, for sure. Like, in particular, and I can say this now because it ended positively, the relationship ended positively, but Good Boys was a project that I was supposed to have finished for Portage and Main, and some life things came up. You know, I had a friend sick, I had COVID arrived, I had all of these things that I didn't communicate with them clearly, that life had got in the way, that I wasn't going to meet this deadline. And they're honestly one of the best publishers I've ever worked for, as far as doing everything they say they will do. Not every publisher does. I'm sure they mean to, but they don't. Portage and Main is one of the only publishers I've ever worked for that has done every single thing they've ever promised, including hold me to my deadline. Right?
Right.
And this is not a small project.
No,
Good Boys
huge.
Was how many pages?
120 pages. A sizable advance. They put money down on the table. They hired editors. They did the considerable work of doing everything to get the book out on time. And I was the one that missed that, and the pressure of that building up around me on top of COVID, on top of, visiting a dying friend, all these things. I got so stressed out about my inability to be professional to the point where I couldn't work. There was this huge block between all of the systems I had in place to accomplish things and my ability to actually get anything done at all. And the way that I got past it was starting Moon Patrol. starting a project that had no deadline, no reason to be done at all, except I wanted to know, could I draw with the tablet? I'd never tried drawing with the tablet. It was one of those distractions, in a sense, that had no place in my life at that point. But if I didn't do something, I knew I would never find my way back. So I just had to, like, make something for its own sake. And what that led to was a sense of calm. Okay, I'm making things again. I can clearly learn a new skill. You know, the world is not falling apart. Port Jemaine, as a publisher, were ultra compassionate once they found out the full story. They were super lenient about giving back the advance, giving me a lot, like saying, like, the world closed, right? You know, we got to hold you to the contract, but we're also human beings, right? And we've parted as, you know, we parted amicably, and we've talked about other projects and things since. So it was one of those scenarios where, leading up to it, the burden of how do I finish? I can't. Mm-hmm. And if I had just said to them right away, what I knew, I think, deep down was, I can't finish. I can't finish under these conditions because I won't love it. I could finish, but I won't love it. And I need to love this book because I did it myself and brought it to you. So I have to love it if I'm going to finish it. And though all those things came about at a real tricky time, and I had to, like, you know, talk to my wife and be like, hey, you know all this money we got? We're going to give all that back, right? You know all this time we got because we got this money? We're going to have to do something else instead of that. You know all these pages that I did? I don't know what I'm going to do with them now. They're mine according to the contract, right? Mm-hmm. The rights will return to me. And so all of that stuff sort of felt like this deadline failure that had been such a great success up until that point. And it can be crushing. What can I say? It can be absolutely crushing, but you just have to keep doing it.
Now, in retrospect, do you think you could have done anything differently to be able to meet that deadline?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, I could have. What I should have done is not tried to separate my concept. And I mean, I've had 2 years to think about it, right? So I can be pretty clear now in what at the time I was had no objectivity about.
And you were pretty clear about that at the time. I think you talked about this on the podcast.
I may have, yeah.
Episode number, we don't care. You guys can look it up yourselves.
That's some cool business, Dan. That's some cool business. Making people do their own work? Damn. How I could have fixed it was the moment I said, wow, this is a big thing in my life, right? I have a friend that I'm going to be making time for as they are coming to the end of their life, that I want to make that time for. I legitimately at the time was just like, it's just time. I was literally just calculating time, like, oh, I need this much extra time. And I did not calculate how much more brain power, how much more emotional strength, how much all that stuff. And if when the first note had come in, I had said to my editor, hey, by the way, just so that you know, this is an important life event, right? It might not affect this project, but it probably will. I am a human being after all. Then the thresholds would have changed. And like I said, Port Jemaine, enormous emotional capacity in their bosses. Catherine, I'm talking about you. To say, hey, that's normal. That's fine. I'm sure that there would have been some adjustments made. But they had been so amazing up until that point. I got caught up in this idea that, like, don't let them down. You can do it. Just finish it. You're a professional. You know, it's your work. Just do your work. Just do your job. And that was, I think, in the end, the wrong thing to do. Because then notes that would come back that were normal notes, I became completely intractable about changing things. Mm. Right?
Like, which
I
was like, not like you. That's,
right, which is not like me. And that should have been my big alarm bell. That normally when a collaborator at an editorial level says, hey, have you thought about a change like this to smooth out the story? I go, no, I haven't. And then I explore the idea. I just, I guess, didn't, as the expression goes, didn't have the spoons left. And so instead, I just said no, right? No, I'm not doing that. I don't want to do that. I'm not going to make those changes. Those are not, and that should have, to me, been the real alarm. And if we had been actually in the studio, like, even your reaction here, like, that's not like you. mm-hmm. would have been apparent.
There's some, like, yeah, mental health flags.
Right? You would have said, well, that's weird. Why does that piss you off? That's not, like, a big deal, right? Mm-hmm. Which is the beauty of working in a studio alongside someone who's on different jobs but a similar style. But we were in our own little bubbles. We were in our isolations. I was just mm-hmm. in a little makeshift place that I had to work to try and race towards a deadline. And all of that stuff together sort of culminated into this perfect calamity of completely missing the mark, mm-hmm. right? Now, 2 years later, I can say that finished manuscript is what got me an agent at a major creative agency, and the work was of a level that was already, you know, Port of Jermaine was going to publish it already, so it was already, had passed through so many gates. So the corollary here is that a previous experience that I had had with a very disreputable publisher had given me the foresight to include and make sure was included in the contract right away that if it's not finished, I will pay the advance back, but the rights will instantly revert to me. Right? So that once money is off the table, the product is yours. I had no, at that moment, I wasn't thinking that way. But a year previous to even that breakdown, right, I had that experience that I had brought into it. So everything that works that you add into your process of managing workflow and managing your own, I guess, job expectation that I had when I was good saved me when it went down, which, you know, you can see previous podcasts where we've talked about the importance of a really strong contract, right? I had actually, past me, had protected that future me from things all falling apart.
It's a beautiful thing, the destruction of words.
Yeah, there's that balance of real life and work life, and sometimes real life just wins and work life has to suffer, and I think that's just something that you have to accept is going to happen sometimes, and being upfront and getting ahead of it with clients can save you a bunch.
Yeah. And it's interesting, if it had just been regular client work, like whenever anything comes up with what I would call regular client work, I just tell them.
And no client has ever been like, that's unacceptable. It's always like, oh crap, you've got that going. Like, okay, next week is fine. Yeah.
And with regular, you know, it's so funny because sorry if you are listening to this and you're someone that I would consider a regular client. Sorry to treat you so normally, right? I'll happily tell you immediately if I need an extra 2 days or I'm going to be early a few extra weeks. Like sometimes fairly often I come in ahead of schedule, right? But with this particular client, because they were so amazing, I didn't want to drop the ball. And I think, you know, like you've had big clients like with Disney and Netflix and these other things. There's this idea that if I don't screw this up, there'll be more like this. And that, I think, can be a trap for managing your time. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, we talked about this all talking about workflow. One of the important things in your nonlinear cloud of workflow has to be time to think about your mental health, to think about what your family needs, to think about the time you need to manage that stuff. And you can't constantly just take that off of the schedule and hope that there'll be no repercussion. A bigger answer than you probably expected.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, dropped a truth bomb on you there. Yeah. Yeah.
I have a real problem completing tasks that I don't like to do.
I thought you were going to say with Justin, because you were looking right at him.
No, but for me, in particular, for me, it's the marking assignments part of it that I don't like.
Marking is bullshit.
Well, I know that's part of the reason why I don't like it, because I know that it's bullshit. I know that, you know, the marks don't matter. It's the knowledge. It's the skills that you convey to the students. But the marks are a measurement point that you need. Apparently. So that's always my least favorite thing. So what I've done now to try and combat that is to not think of it in terms of marking, just think of it in terms of feeding back to them and giving them the valuable feedback they need.
So reframing it in your mind as
A necessary
like reframing part, the task
yeah,
in your mind.
As a necessary part of the process in order for them to learn. And I also look at it in terms of my reward for doing that is to be able to teach them the next thing. Because my favorite part of the class is class time. My favorite part of my job is doing being in class with the students. So that's my reward when I complete the... Because you can't move on without completing the previous assignment, right? You have to mark and look at what you learned and then move on to the next thing. So
let's talk about that for a sec. Rewards at the end of tasks. Do you do that?
Oh, constantly. Yeah.
What are some rewards sometimes?
Okay, so I have... Just the first thing that came to mind is should be the answer that I give you. I have a stack of to-read books, comics, graphic novels, mm-hmm. right? And as I take things out of my cloud, I take things out of that to-read pile and consume them.
So you get to read more books.
Yeah. So, like, one of my greatest joys in life is to, like, fall completely into someone else's world and story and whatever. And so in order to do that completely, like, guilt-free, like, I'm absolutely just going to take however long it takes to finish this book, when I take something off of that wall, I know... If I want to spend a whole day reading this book, no problem. I have the time. I
also
earned
the
it.
The side effect of it's going to fire you up to want to create more. It's, so your reward is feeding the monster even more.
Feed the monster. But the other reward that I have is that, you know, I'm at that age where I still get along really well with my kids, right? They're just preteen, and I really like spending time with them, and they seem to encourage me to spend time with them. And so one of my rewards is knowing that when they say, "Dad, do you wanna whatever the answer, whatever it is," I can say yes, right? And so if the more things I pull off that board, the more often I can say yes. And same with spending time with Tara, you know, same thing. Those are rewards to me. And I think a real wealthy life has nothing to do with money.
Of course, whatsoever. No, I agree. Right? I agree with that. Yeah.
And so those are tasks. Every now and then we get a payday in this job, but it's feast and famine, and so you. If you're hanging all of your expectations on those things, no reward there for me. What about you? What kind of rewards you got?
I have a nice bottle of scotch hidden at the studio.
Where?
The scotch bottle. I know about this reward.
Let's look for it.
Yeah. It's special.
When I complete if I get a really big client or complete a book or do a really big project, I mark on the bottle of scotch with a Sharpie the date and what it was, and then I get a glass of nice
you have
scotch.
A personal celebration.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Anyone listening who is a big client, try to toggle it because it would be unhealthy for Justin to receive too much success too fast. It will lead to a bad habit.
Yeah. I just play Zelda.
Right?
If I've accomplished everything I set to do for the day, I sit down and play Breath of the Wild for an hour or two, and that's awesome.
I really want to get back into video games, but I'm fighting against it because I have like too many projects on the go right now, and I've never finished Final Fantasy VI. I have it. I've started it. I want to start it again, but I know my video game schedule habits are not necessarily the most.
They're sprint related.
Conducive. They usually involve a lot of late nights. Like when I get going, I like to stay up late playing games, which means I wake up later.
Shout out to Tom. I think you've been missing this, right? Mm-hmm. There is a person we stay with when we go to the Calgary show. Our friend Tom. Tom, if you're listening, we miss you so dearly. He has such a great setup for just video games in general. His media setup is... bar none. You would die if you saw his DVD collection. Like, your heart would just explode.
My favorite part is there's this massive bowl. Bowl's not the right word. Like...
Cauldron?
Shield. Upside down shield.
Yeah.
Just full of, like, little Halloween candy bars. Like...
Fun size
candy bars.
So not a healthy place for me and my habits to arrive. But what we would do is we would book 2 days after the Calgary show, which is a huge show for us. We would just hang out with Tom at Tom's place.
We completed Resident Evil 5 or 6, the one in the swamp.
Yeah, and we just didn't sleep and didn't do anything but eat candy and play video games for basically 2 days straight, knowing that we had just worked solid for 7 days straight.
We deserved it.
And we deserved it.
Right, it was our reward.
But rather than rest, we did the opposite of rest. But mentally... we were resting, you know, it was like, there are no responsibilities here. I was away from home, you know, the kids are handled, the thing is all done. And we had built in this time to just let it go, let it all go. As the expression goes, everything in moderation, including moderation.
Yeah, I like that.
Do you ever employ time management techniques while you're playing video games? Because I do that sometimes.
Oh. Time? No, on my phone I set a timer. Yeah.
I will. Yeah. No, not that necessarily that. I'll say, okay, I'm gonna complete these tasks today in Zelda. I'm gonna go and unlock these towers. I'm gonna do these shrines, and I'm gonna fight this enemy, and then I'm gonna be done for the day, and then I accomplish those things, and I feel good about it.
Oh, like you set tasks within
the game, because it's a kind of game where there's a lot of different things to do, so you have to kind of manage that.
I'm gonna do two more temples and then I'm done for the day.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, no, I do it by time with video games, and so
I mean that's also a very valid way to do it. The point is that video games, in particular, this is again going back to my students. This was a very, very common time suck for a lot of them because they always identified that they just lose too much time playing video games, meaning they lose track of time, right? Which is a problem. So it's either you do it at the end of the day, so it doesn't matter. Right? And you can just play until you're tired and fall asleep, or you just pick a time that you just do it during a certain, like, you know, middle of the day, couple hours playing Zelda, and then back to work.
Here's the other thing too, though. Like, if your day is filled with completing tasks, and then your downtime, your relaxing time, is completing tasks.
Task oriented.
Within a video game world, is it relaxing, or are you still just feeding that productivity monster in your head?
Are we actually only describing our mental illnesses here on this podcast?
Yeah. That's the next Zelda game. It's just going to be a time management game, and Link has to accomplish these tasks.
Busy Link has so much to do. That's right. But he needs time for the princess. He needs to
beat Ganon and rescue Zelda.
I was listening to a podcast with Felicia Day, and she was talking about how, like, she had like a real Warcraft addiction at one point in her life. This was before she did the...
I know two Warcraft widows. Literally, marriages fell apart as a result of Warcraft.
Yeah. And her day was like scheduled out, like wake up at 8:30, farm in World of Warcraft from 8:30 to 9. Then, you know, you have to commute over to this place in the game. And so it became like her whole, like her job. And they're like, but so her hobby had turned into her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, and I wonder too, like how much, especially like with us sometimes, you know, like, as artists who do fan art, when I'm playing games, part of it is like, oh, I can play more video games because I can make artwork based on this that can make me sales. You know, like, so it's almost like...
I try to balance, try being the operative word here, but I try to balance kind of a 2-to-1 ratio every day of making more than I consume. And I just feel like, for me, if I'm not doing... I know my mood changes. Everything about me changes. If I'm not actually doing something more than I'm consuming, if I watch too much TV, if I play too many video games, if I'm just wasting time goofing around with my friends or whatever, I get into this, like, malaise of, like, you know... And is it an addiction maybe to accomplishment? You know, that's definitely part of that. But there's also a side of it, you know... joked about it many times, that you don't have all that much time, right? And you'll be dead soon. So should you play that extra hour of video games, or should you write that letter to your grandma, right? Which of those two things are the ones that you should spend your time doing? And it can be really hard, especially...
The next generation is going to be go online and play video games with your grandma.
With your grandma. That is going to be it.
With grandma.
Right? You know, like my kids, grandkids will for sure have games that, you know, health willing, I can play against them, just trash, just destroy them when they're little kids.
Surrounded.
The house is surrounded.
I suppose we may as well say goodbye.
We may as well say goodbye. While we're on the subject, here comes a candle to light you to bed. Here comes a chopper to chop off your head.
What about you, Dan? You've got, like, a million things that you also... Little pieces of all kinds of things. How do you manage all that?
Not very well. I do admit that I can improve my time management, and it's ironic because I do teach this, but I don't always follow my own advice when it comes to...
A carpenter with a leaky roof.
Yeah, a little bit of that. But I just... I am kind of like you in that I do... Like, where my attention goes is what I want to do, and I do, like... I do jump around as well, and I do find that to be an effective technique for me. Again, the students that we're talking about it are just starting to learn about their own workflow, so they may change their minds on that going forward. But yeah, I just don't. I use lists. I cross off lists. I check off lists, and that's kind of old school way of doing it. But that's kind of my main way.
It's so individual too, right? Like everybody's going to have a different thing that clicks for them. And once you...
I've tried many times using digital software planners. They do not work for me.
Yeah.
My brain does not organize that way. And I need to, on Thursday, sit down and rearrange what I think the entire month's worth of work is going to look like because I get a certain phone call. And then on Friday, they call back and say, no, here, you've got an extra 2 weeks. So I need to reorganize the whole. So it's just not, it's not practical for me to use the digital software.
And then the other thing is that for, sorry, I just lost my train of thought. Go on. You say something now. I can't remember what I was going to say. Sorry.
Time management.
I do that all the time.
Workflow.
I'll cut that part out.
And then is, I find it hard too. Like, as soon as I have a bunch of projects lined up, a bunch of work that should be taking up all my time for the next like 2-3 weeks, that's when I come up with the best idea. That's when I come up with the Moon Patrols, right?
Yeah.
Right now, I just came
up.
That's
why he came up with Moon Patrol.
Yeah, yeah. That's when you came up with Moon Patrol.
A Moon Patrol as a concept.
Okay.
Yeah.
Dan, you have your own Moon Patrol inside you.
We all have a Moon Patrol that just wants to come out.
I really want to design this dinosaur saloon I sketched out while we've been talking, where it's like a bunch of raptors are like horses, like they're all tethered up, and then there's a brontosaurus with a big barrel on his back.
Oh, it's like the saloon from Turok or something like that.
Yeah. Oh, man.
That's awesome.
It's so fun to build.
Yeah.
But I have so many things I should be doing.
Right? And this happens. Your brain, your subconscious is like putting pieces together and knows in that tension, like, I know what would release your stress.
That's why Einstein worked at the patent shop, right?
Boring
job, so his higher brain function would...
I don't know if the wire was the reason for the other, but I think that they best definitely fueled each other. There's also that story of, I forget who, was it Ford? Doesn't matter. The point of the story is there was this person, he was an industrial designer, I'm pretty sure responsible for the automotive disaster that we're in now. But when they would think of new thoughts, they'd doze off. They'd sit in a chair and hold ball bearings in one hand and had a steel pan on the ground. And their best thinking was just before the ball bearing struck the pan, and the ball bearing would wake them up and they'd remember the idea. Right, just that space between sleep and wakefulness, that jarring moment, they could capture that new thought. Mm-hmm. Now, to me, this is obviously a person who is not managing their own health very well and is dozing off constantly and doesn't have any time to think, and this is how they're capturing it. So I'm not sure if this is necessarily a good example of what to do, but there are lots of different ways to do it. How to get those ideas.
There are also people who like spend all their time just being drunk. Have you seen that movie with Mads Mikkelsen?
No, but I'll watch anything with Mads Mikkelsen.
It's very good. It's strange, but he has this theory that maintaining a certain level of alcoholic content in your brain makes it work at an optimal level. Yeah. It's pretty interesting theory. But
yeah, tell that theory to Justin's whiskey bottle or we'll be in trouble.
Even endorphins, right? Going for a long walk or a run. Mm. Especially like long runs with like the right soundtrack, I'll come up with some of my best ideas when, the endorphins are flowing, right?
True. When I'm stuck, I don't work. This is an important part of needing the cloud for me. If I hit a wall on any project, I don't go lament and try to procrastinate around it. I just switch. I switch to a different thing. I look at that cloud and I say, what of these things? They might not be as urgent as this one, but I clearly can't work on this one right now. What of these things can I accomplish?
And then does that thing go back up on the board until you take it back down again?
Yeah, okay. It goes back up on the board. And this started, what was the name of that book? Was it Scrum?
Scrum is, for those of you who don't know, it's a time management system that's used, I think, a lot. It's been around for a long time, but especially IT companies started using it. Now it's kind of everywhere. There's books and things, but it's essentially you write down all your tasks on pieces of paper, and you have a big board that is the ice box, where it's things that don't need to be started yet, and then things that need to start, in progress, and finish. So it's like a couple different sections, and throughout your day, you should just be moving things around the board from in progress to finish to needing to be done from the icebox. And so you're just physically moving all these little tasks around.
And we spent a month or two running our whole studio essentially according to that Scrum thing. This would be a couple of years ago now. And
this really helps you visualize.
Yeah, the visualizing,
like, a whole bunch of little things that are just swirling around your head.
It for sure evolved for me into the system I use now. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I held over from Scrum, and this is again saying try lots of stuff if you're trying to manage your time, because you're going to steal things that work for you. My favorite thing I stole from that time management system is my week ends on Wednesday. In my mind, end of the week is Wednesday. Start of the week is Thursday. Middle of the week is the weekend. And so when everyone else is ramping down, I'm ramping up. Mm-hmm. Right? And that has really helped me under-promise and over-deliver with my clients, with my workflow.
So is today your Sunday?
Today is Sunday.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Look at, and what am I doing? My kids are here. We're hanging out.
Yeah, it's not a big deal.
There's low stress today.
Okay.
In my workflow, so that if we can't get here on time or things don't quite work the way they're supposed to, no big deal. So rather than be the end of the week Friday, right, my week really starts tomorrow.
Hmm. Interesting.
My favorite little trick that I've been doing lately, which I wish I'd done sooner, is at the end of my workday, I open up what I should be working on the next day. So when I come to the computer the next day, as soon as I, you know, turn the screensaver off, everything that I'm supposed to be working on is up and ready to go.
Yeah.
I found a lot of my mornings, I was just kind of like, you know, still groggy and trying to figure out, like, what should I be doing today? Whereas the night before, when you're still kind of sharp, that's when you should kind of get that ready to go. Open those files, have them ready for you for the next morning, so it's all kind of laid out.
Yeah.
Kind of like laying out your clothes for the next day, right? And I've found it very, very useful just to kind of zero in right off the bat.
Last question for you two gentlemen related to this topic of time management. Having had this conversation, I'm sure you have evaluated in your own mind what's working and what's not. Like, you can't have a conversation without putting yourself a little under the microscope. Has anything occurred to you about your next week worth of work in this conversation?
I write down everything physically as well in a sketchbook, and it's become a little muddled. And so after this conversation, I really want to take that sketchbook, and it's almost finished as well. So bring it into a new sketchbook or bring it onto Post-its and just kind of lay it all out. So I have a bunch of my next like week or two just kind of listed out a little more cleanly, because right now it's kind of just spread across a bunch of pages and it needs to just be cleaned up.
I'm going to try your cloud method. I think that sounds a lot like my own workflow. So I just moved into a new house. So I'm setting up my workspace at home and getting all that stuff set up with a computer desk. So I'm going to have a space on my wall for stuff
to
put on there. And I'm going to do that exactly what you say. Sit down, look at the cloud. What do I want to do? And grab the thing and start doing it that way. So I'll see. I'll report back and let you know how that's working for me.
Yeah, one of the things I found helpful is write the expected finishing date of that object. And then break up a few of the like thresholds. So like if it's a, you know, it's a book, the cover, the interior layout, the pages, whatever. If it's just a cover for somebody, the thumbnails, the color scheme, you know, those things that you eventually have to do, because sometimes you take it off and you have to put it back. And I love that feeling of the check mark of like, well, I did something. I didn't finish, but I got close. At least I did the thumbnails, or at least I did the color language or whatever it is.
You modify the thing before you put it back up? Like you just kind of like update it to whatever, or write a new note?
That's right, write a new note. So sometimes I put a sticky note on the original one or change it, but so that if I take it off to work on, it goes back altered. So that the next day, even if I'm feeling like, I didn't get as much done as I wanted to, you'd look and you'd at least see some tacit indication of your previous accomplishments, so that it's not a source of frustration, but at least like a point in your favor. One of the things I've thought about is I have at least three things in that cloud that I, if I'm being really honest with myself, they've been ones that I haven't reached for on purpose. I don't really want to do them. Mm-hmm. I don't really want to do them. I will do them. I don't really want to do them. I'm going to do those first tomorrow. At the beginning of my new week, I'm going to make sure that those are high up on the task list, and I'm just going to spend some time with them. And
give yourself a reward after. Have a glass of scotch.
No. But what I do, what I have learned is that you've got to give yourself permission to accomplish nothing also. Like if you're going to try a thing, right, if you know you don't really want to, you have to give yourself permission not to finish. So when I take that first task off tomorrow, I won't say, oh, I better finish this, because I promised that I would. I'm just going to take it off and do whatever I can. And if that's good, then great. If it's 20 minutes before I hit the wall, I'll put it back and trust the system. The system has worked up until now. As long as it's injected, I've learned with more honesty with the collaborators, then it works. And so I can just trust that it works. But if I'm being honest also with myself, there's a few I've left to the peripheral. So we'll all report back.
Sounds good.
All right. Well, this has been Super Pulp Science, where we talk about how genre gets made. This is Gregory Kmicek encouraging you to join the fight and make comics.